The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And a good evening, everyone. This is indeed Sports Talk 1240. It is Sunday, June 18th. And for the next hour, I am Jake Asman, and I will be with you talking sports right here on AM 1240 WGBB. Normally, I host shows with Dan Budick, but Dan is actually unavailable to be in studio tonight. He's in New Jersey celebrating Father's Day with his father, Alan, who lives there. So a happy Father's Day to all the dads out there listening. Happy Father's Day to my father, Steve Asman, who I know is listening. And maybe I can get him to call in later on in the show and talk about why he made me a Jets fan, because I still feel the ramifications of that each and every day. And speaking of the Jets, and about 15 minutes, Connor Hughes of the New Jersey Star Ledger, he's going to join me on the program. So Connor Hughes will check in and he will talk Jets with me at 8:15. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll get into what's gone on with them in minicamp as the Jets now break for summer, have about six weeks off before they get into training camp, and then the tanking begins if you're a Jet fan. So not a lot to look forward to, but we will break it all down with Connor Hughes in just a little while. But we're going to begin with the New York baseball. Later on in the show, we'll get into Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather and how much of a circus that's going to be. We will also touch on the NBA draft, the 76ers. They're going all in. They made a big-time move with the Celtics to acquire the number one pick. So I will give you my thoughts on that. And then I'll tell you what I think the Knicks are going to do at number 8 in the NBA draft, which is on Thursday. The Knicks have the 8th pick. Not the 7th pick, though, because they had to win their final game of the regular season, and it ended up costing them one spot in the draft. But we'll get to the Knicks. We'll get to the NBA in the back 30 minutes of the program. Once again, Jake Asman here taking you until 9 p.m. The phone number to get involved is 631-888-8811. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Asman. And you can follow Sports Talk 1240 on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240. But we begin with the New York baseball scene, and we start with the Yankees, who are now in a real losing streak, and they have not played well. This team has now lost 6 straight games. Their bullpen has been awful during this road trip. And the Yankees, who have a day off before they return back home to Yankee Stadium Tuesday night against the Angels, they're going to come in on a 6-game losing streak. They just finished this road trip at 1-6. And you look at this Yankees team today, they lose 4-3 out in Oakland to the Oakland A's today. And Luis Sessa, who is a AAA pitcher, got the start, and he was not good. And we can kill the bullpen all we want. The bullpen today did an excellent job. They pitched 6 shutout innings. Aroldis Chapman came back, and he did his thing. But Luis Sessa only went 4 innings today, allowed 4 earned runs, gave up a home run in this game. And you look at what happened for the Yankees here, and you know, with CC Sabathia going down, someone had to make the start in the rotation for him. And the Yankees decided to go with Luis Sessa. And the issue with Luis Sessa is he's 3-6 with a 4.15 ERA. This was in AAA, but he's on the 40-man roster. So what does that mean? Well, that means the Yankees can bring him up without having to make a move on that roster and potentially lose a player. You might ask, well, don't they have anyone better in AAA? They do, in Chance Adams, who's 4-2 with a 2.43 ERA in 7 starts. But they're not going to bring up Chance Adams because he's not on the 40-man roster yet. And since he's not on the 40-man roster, the Yankees were stuck with bad options, quite frankly, at that spot. So Luis Sessa goes out there today, and he was horrendous, only going 4 innings, giving up the 4 earned runs. And the way this rotation has pitched has been bad during this road trip. The way the bullpen, which, as I just said before, was actually really good today, has been brutal. And these games against the A's have just been downright painful as a Yankee fan. First off, when you're playing out on the West Coast, and you're going to stay up late for games that go extra innings or games that are, you know, 4 hours plus long, you want to at least win the game. There's nothing worse than, as a baseball fan, when you got work in the morning, you're staying up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning watching your team, and then they lose in heartbreaking fashion. And that's what happened to this Yankees team during this road trip. It's been frustrating, and as a Yankee fan, you know, you're sick to your stomach watching it because you have no idea what's going on right now. And you look at this Yankee team and you look at what they've been able to do really well. It started with their offense and they were hitting, but it also started with their pitching and their bullpen specifically. And Aroldis Chapman goes down and you think, okay, you know, what is this team going to be without him? And we've seen it. You know, as great as Dellin Betances is, Tyler Clipper during this road trip was awful. So the Yankees go 1-6 on the road trip. They lose six straight games. They win the first game, and then the last 6 days have been a combination of bad bullpen performances by you name it. And now Adam Warren's on the DL, so thank God Aroldis Chapman is back, because you slot him back in there, and all of a sudden Dellin Betances, who is your eighth inning guy, but binder Joe Girardi could also use him in the seventh. They could use him for two innings in a game that's close, in a game they need. Or they could use Betances for maybe five outs and have him come in at the end of the seventh inning in a big spot, then pitch the eighth and set up Chapman. But the Yankees have really struggled, and this team that got off to such a great start, you know, they had won six in a row going into this. All of a sudden, the Yankees are 38-29 now. You know, they're not even 10 games over 500. They're only 9 games over. Boston's right behind them, and the Red Sox play tonight. They're playing right now, just about to start on Sunday Night Baseball against Houston. If the Boston Red Sox win tonight, this lead for the Yankees in the division, there is no lead. They're tied. So you look at this Yankee team, and right now, they're tied with the Boston Red Sox if the Boston Red Sox go on and win tonight. So the Yankees, that had about a four-game lead after they won six straight games, they gave it all back with this poor road trip. And they got to bounce back. This team has not played well on the road all season. In fact, the Yankees have only won one series on the road this entire year. It's been a major problem for them. And now they go back home against the Angels, and they just saw the Angels. But let's be honest here. The Angels are a beatable team for the Yankees. You know, they lost two out of three to them, but the Yankees got to go and take care of business at home here. They have the Rangers coming in after the Angels, who are at 500 right now at 34-34. But the Angels at 36-37 coming back east to play at Yankee Stadium. You know, the Yankees got to win these games here. They got to get back on track. When it was just a couple games, you live with it. But now this is a losing streak that's at six games. And we mentioned the bullpen, and I mentioned the starting rotation, but Masahiro Tanaka in yesterday's game on Saturday was downright brutal. And he's really turned into Michael Pineda. He's either a strikeout or he allows a home run, all with two outs. And these injuries, they've continued to mount. Now Warren's going down. They already lost Sabathia, and that's why Luis Sessa, who has no business being on a major league roster, why he had to go out there and pitch today. So the Yankees have struggled. They have lost now six consecutive games in a row. And it's not going to get any better unless they start finding a way to piece together in the bullpen. I think Chapman makes a huge difference. I think he's going to help. I think he's going to be effective. We know what they have in Betances, but right now the offense has been cold up late. They need Aaron Judge to continue to carry them, and he's been able to do so. But Gary Sanchez goes down. Good thing he got back in the lineup. They lost Aaron Hicks. So Yankee fans, this is the first time all season where this team has actually, you know, struggled. They got off to the 1-4 start and then rattled off an 8-game winning streak, and they haven't looked back since. Well, this is the first time they've gone through an extended period of losing here, and they're going back home. They have the off day tomorrow. That should be huge. But if you're a Yankee fan, are you a little concerned right now about this team? Give me a call, 631-888-8811. The injuries have been a problem. Tanaka's been a major problem, though. And I just told you, he reminds me of Michael Pineda from a year ago. Masahiro Tanaka doesn't even look like the same pitcher right now. I mean, this guy has struggled. He has not been able to put together back-to-back starts. And you could talk about, oh, he needs an extra day of rest. He's had extra days of rest and has still been brutal. He's had multiple days of rest and has been bad. He's had his personal catcher in Austin Romine and has still been bad. And the concern for the Yankees is this. They've given themselves such a good start that when they do get out of this losing streak here, they're going to be okay. They're going to be able to stay afloat, and they're going to be in it throughout the entire season. But they got off to such a good start that your expectation is, hey, we feel good that we're better than maybe the expectations were. We feel good that we can win a division, that we can compete and go on a run. And what the Yankees do at the trade deadline in a month from now, that's going to be telling. But you look at, or more than a month, almost 2 months, you look at what's going on with this team, though, and they have struggled. How do they rectify it? Well, it starts with the pitching. They got to get good starts from this rotation, and they got to make it easier on this bullpen. But they also got to find a way to continue to play well at home, and they're going back home, so it's important for them to figure it out and get back to what they were doing so well. The issues I have with this team is Greg Bird, who has been hurt and now had another setback, he's not coming back anytime soon.
So you look at Chris Carter and what he's been able to do at first base, and what he's been able to do has been basically nothing. Now all of a sudden, you're getting no production at first base for the time being, and you gotta wonder, you know, at one point do the Yankees say, we can't continue to go out there with Chris Carter and survive. And the backup options, they're not that great. Rob Refschneider is your second string first baseman right now. They might have to consider playing Matt Holliday at first base more and finding a way to get more bats in the lineup. We all want Gleyber Torres here, but guess what happened to him yesterday? He hurt himself, and now he's going to go on the, I believe, the 7-day DL is what they have in AAA. So he's going to miss some time. So they're going to be without Gleyber Torres down in AAA, so that's going to delay when you can see him. And first off, he's got to conquer AAA. He's not there yet. So this team is kind of what they are. You hope going back home could get them to figure things out, because it's been a struggle right now to be a Yankee fan watching this trip. They've given so many games away because of the lack of bullpen, and today because of the lack of a bad start by Luis Sessa, who shouldn't be on this major league roster right now. And that's a major problem as a Yankee fan as they go back home. You know, what can they do to fix the situation? What can they do to fix Tanaka? The issue is there's no one to replace Tanaka. Tanaka's going to keep going back out there, and he has to figure out a way to pitch better. You know, this has been an issue with Masahiro Tanaka now for the full season. It's amazing that he's had a couple games where he's actually been brilliant, because you just wonder why he can't figure it out. He only goes 4 innings on Saturday, allows 5 earned runs, and the guy had 10 strikeouts. So that's my comparison to Pineda. Most of the damage the Oakland A's did in that game was with 2 outs. So this is a guy that has really struggled. This is a guy that has not been able to figure out what has been his problem, what has been plaguing him. And as long as Masahiro Tanaka is on the Yankees are going to keep throwing him out there. And then the real issue becomes, you know, who else is going to be able to raise their game in the rotation without CeCe Sabathia? Severino, we know he could do it, but the other day was a bad time for him to have his first real rough start in a long time. You know, the Yankees are now kind of falling back into the right in the middle of things here in the American League East. The Red Sox are right on them, and they're going to be able to figure it out. They have to be able to figure it out soon, because this is the Yankees team that we knew coming in, that if they were competing in September, we'd gladly take it. But I think expectations change now. When you get to, at one point, 15 games over 500, you know, when you're 38-22, I think your expectations change for the team. Now they're 38-29 after losing 6 straight games. But this is the Yankees team, I think, that has shown you enough that they're going to be in it all year. But how do they rectify a situation here? They got to improve at first base. They got to get something from Chase Headley, who actually, to his credit, has started to hit up late at third base. But this is the situation for the Yankees they have to learn how to fix. They have to find a way to get better starts and better innings pitched from the bullpen. And I think Chapman coming back will obviously be a huge part of that. So you just wonder if Aroldis Chapman can come in and he can play his role well. And if he can, you feel a lot better about this bullpen going forward, as the Yankees will head home and they'll take on the Angels. And obviously, you hope that going back home makes this team better. And Connor Hughes is going to join me on the phone in a couple minutes here to talk some Jets. But we'll briefly touch on the Mets, and we can get more into this after we talk with Connor about the Jets. But the Mets, they actually won a ball game today, 5-1 over the Nationals. And you look at the updated standings, though, this Mets team now, they lost 3 out of 4 to the Nationals. They're 11.5 games back of the Nationals. And you look at the wild card, not much better. They're 10 games back of the wild card. So this is a team that has continued to struggle. If you're a Met fan, all the injuries continue to mount. And today was great. You get a win. But this team's going nowhere fast. I just don't see it changing for the Mets. We keep waiting for them to flip that switch. But now they're going out west to play the Dodgers and the Giants. This team could be 16 games out of first place if they're not careful here going out west. So this is the Mets team that has really struggled. And now they lose 3 out of 4 of the Nationals. They were lucky they didn't get swept today. DeGrom went out there and tossed 8 innings of 1-run ball, and you feel really good about the job he did. But outside of Jacob DeGrom, and I know they have Lugo, and you know I know they got back Steven Matz, who didn't pitch that well the other day. You know, the way this Mets team is right now, every time they get something going right, somebody else drops down to an injury. You almost feel as a Met fan right now that if somebody doesn't go on the DL after a ball game, even if you lose the game, it's almost a win. I mean, that's how many guys have gotten hurt this season for this team. And I think you look at the Mets and where they are right now, and unless they don't go on a run quickly, they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline. They're going to have to move a Lucas Duda. They're going to have to move a Neil Walker. They're going to have to move a Jay Bruce, who's actually probably their most tradable asset. He's having a great year. This is a Mets team that is going to have to sell, 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 do exactly what the Yankees did last year. Because you know what? It worked. and you bring up your young kids. I think it's time to bring up Amed Rosario. He's hitting 350 in AAA. What more do you see? Do you need to see from him? And the idea, well, you want him to come up and be here for good. If he comes up and plays well, he's an upgrade over Jose Reyes no matter what he does. If he's 50% of what Jose Reyes has given the Mets this year, he's a substantial upgrade. So the Mets right now, six games under 500, going out west. I think it's time to bring up Amed Rosario. I don't know what's taking so long. And listen, I'm not going to say that this guy's going to be Gary Sanchez, but we saw it last year that when the Yankees called up Gary Sanchez, it provided a spark. And this was after they traded everyone. He gave them a spark and he gave them an opportunity to still somehow almost sneak into the playoffs. I don't know if that's going to happen here with Rosario, but at least as a Mets fan, he gives you something to watch. He gives you some hope. And I don't need to hear from Sandy Alderson that we have really good players on the roster. If you're a Mets fan, I'd be pulling my hair out listening to that. You have very good players on the roster that are also contributing to why you're still six games under 500. So how good really are these players? So the Mets going out west here, you know, they're faced with a really difficult circumstance here. They got to go to the Dodgers, who are 44-26, right there in the middle of the conversation in the NL West, alongside the Rockies and even the Diamondbacks. Then they got to go to the Giants, which is never easy. You look at what's going on for this team right now, and then they don't really have a lot going for them. They won today, great, but I need to see a lot more than just one game against the Nationals. This is the team that got swept, or that almost got swept. They lost 3 out of 4. And all the good built-up will that you had coming off taking 3 out of 4 from the Atlanta Braves and doing your job the other day at home before this National Series started, you know, you don't really, or against the Cubs, I should say, at home. Yeah, it doesn't really feel that good right now. You lost 3 out of 4 to your rival. And also, on Daniel Murphy for a moment here, people. I have never seen any player leave their team and dominate like Daniel Murphy has for the Washington Nationals. It is unbelievable what we are seeing from Daniel Murphy. Every time he's up, the guy gets a hit. He's hitting like 390 against the Mets. It has been unbelievable to watch Daniel Murphy go on an absolute tear. And unless Daniel Murphy somehow figures out, you know, had a return to the old Daniel Murphy of the Mets days. The Mets are in real trouble because Daniel Murphy was a good player. He wasn't this with the Washington Nationals. He has been able to take what he did in the postseason 2 years ago, helping the Mets get to the World Series. And against the Mets, he plays like Babe Ruth. But against other teams, he's still hitting 345 this year. So what we've seen from Daniel Murphy has just been unbelievable. So the Mets end up losing 3 out of 4 to the Washington Nationals. They're going out west. And you look at what's going on with this team right now. Not much to really be that excited about. That's why I believe it's time to bring up Amed Rosario. Because you know what? If you're a Mets fan, you have nothing to lose at this point. You're six games under 500. Maybe he's the spark. And if he's not the spark, I promise you he's better than Jose Reyes. I mean, I don't know what the Mets have seen in Jose Reyes right now. But at this point, Amed Rosario, you call him up, you feel a lot better about him going forward than Jose Reyes, who not even going to be on the team next year. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. This is Jake Asman here on Sports Talk 1240, going solo tonight on AM 1240 WGBV Radio. You could follow me on Twitter at Jake Asman, and you could get the podcast the next day available on iTunes and at sportstalk1240.com. I said we were going to talk about the Jets, and our next guest knows more about the Jets than almost anybody out there. That is Connor Hughes. He, of course, of the Star Ledger and NJ.com. You can follow Connor on Twitter at Connor_J_Hughes. And he's also one of my favorite followers on Twitter. Does an excellent job covering the team. Connor joins us now. Connor, how are you? Thanks for a couple minutes.
I'm doing well, man. Thank you. I appreciate the kind introduction.
What's going on? So I know, obviously, mini camp is over. So for you as a beat writer, do you actually get some time off here?
Sort of. I mean, as long as nobody gets in trouble and nobody, you know, has any unfortunate firework incidents like happened to a couple of my coworkers not too long ago, I should be good. You know, got a chance to grill, got a chance to relax, got a chance to sit by the beach and you know, take some time off before things get really crazy in August.
Well, enjoy that. I know, obviously, the Jets this season, the expectations are very low, but as someone who's there in the building at One Jets Drive every day, what can you really learn so far just watching minicamp and watching these guys go at it? Obviously, there's no pad, so as someone covering the team, what do you try and get out of covering a minicamp?
Yeah, I mean, you can take sort of a little bit away from that one. I mean, I don't know how much because, again, like you said, they're not in pads, so it's kind of tough to actually like take too much legitimate stuff away from it and really kind of, I guess, assess where these guys are, because you really have to understand this is half football. I mean, that is what this one comes down to, is that it is guys that are, especially in the Jets' perspective offensively, they're learning a brand new offense, a brand new scheme with John Morton. It's not entirely installed. The defense is still putting some stuff together. So, you know, you can make some general assessments as far as where these guys are at with, you know, their conditioning, their shape. When guys are looking really good, you know, you can kind of make a little note of it, but, you know, you can't make any fine-tuned assessments or anything like that until you actually get to a point of training camp. You know, when the pads come on, you actually start seeing these guys do some legitimate football drills.
Let's talk about the quarterback position for a moment here. Obviously, really, you look at the guys on the roster, and the Jets, of course, they bring in Josh McCown, and they already had Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg on the roster. Todd Bowles says it's an open competition. My first question to you is, do you believe him when he says that? And right now, as we currently stand, what do you think of the performances from those three guys as we enter now the six-week period before training camp begins?
It's open. I mean, that's definitely the case. I mean, this is a wide-open quarterback competition, and if you're the Jets, you kind of hope and want Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty to take over as the guy. I mean, you hope one or the other comes through here in training camp, definitely outperforms Josh McCown and shows you guys that you have a quarterback for the future, because Josh McCown's going to be 38 when the season starts. In fact, I think he's actually turning 38 this month. So, you know, you've got a guy that is getting up there in age that is definitely not going to be around in 2 or 3 years. So you want to go and find somebody that's going to be your quarterback of the future. You invested a fourth-round pick in Bryce Petty, so you kind of hope he's the guy. You invested a third or a second-round pick in Christian Hackenberg, so you hope he can be the guy. So, you know, they're going to give those guys opportunities to win the starting quarterback job. But, again, the insurance in case they can't is going to be Josh McCown. You know, he is going to be the insurance because he's a savvy veteran. He's a guy who's done it before, although maybe not at the highest of level. And, you know, so far through OTAs and minicamp, we've kind of seen a definite gap between Josh McCown and Christian Hackenberg, where Josh McCown is definitely the better of these three quarterbacks between he, Hackenberg, and McCown. But at the same time, I mean, it's so early that you expect it, because Josh McCown has experience in this West Coast type offense. He's worked with quarterback coach Jeremy Bates before when they were together in Chicago. So he has a familiarity with this offense that Christian Hackenberg and Bryce Petty don't. Now, what we also have seen is that very wide gap that was around in OTAs is starting to tighten a little bit. You know, Christian Hackenberg's starting to catch up a little bit to where Josh McCown was, and Bryce Petty is looking significantly better in minicamp than he did in OTAs as well. So, you know, they're coming along, you know, in no way, shape, or form do I think are Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty ready to start yet, but they are starting to show signs that maybe you can say, you know what, maybe they could be realistic options here in 2017. Again, though, thoroughly, we've seen just a couple, I think, from the media perspective, we've seen six total padless, contactless practices, but there's at least enough there to say, you know what, I want to see some more, and let's see how this thing transpires now in training camp.
We're talking with Connor Hughes of the Star Ledger and NJ.com. So, Connor, I want to ask you, though, because everyone seems to always compare Christian Hackenberg to Josh McCown, and Bryce Petty, as a guy that does have some playing experience, albeit not that much from last season, he always just kind of feels like the third guy, despite the fact he's been in the NFL longer than, and has played in games more than a Christian Hackenberg. Do the Jets just view Bryce Petty as a long-term, maybe career backup, and they just see Christian Hackenberg as someone with a way higher ceiling?
Yeah, that's obvious. I mean, Christian Hackenberg does athletically have a higher ceiling than Bryce Petty. Another thing to remember is Bryce Petty is not necessarily the youngest young guy here. I know this is only his third NFL season. This is his third NFL season. So, yes, that's a positive with him. But at the same time, I mean, this guy is 25 years old. So, I mean, he kind of entered the NFL as an old rookie, if you will. And at this point, you know, you kind of see what you've got in Bryce Petty. And look, he can be, I think he's a guy that's going to float around the NFL for 10, 11, 12 years. He'll probably start some games here and there for a team because of injury. But I'm not sure Bryce Petty has it in him to be an every day, every year NFL starter. I just don't think he's got that. But again, I mean, you have guys in the NFL that last forever. Chase Daniel is an example. Josh McCown is an example where there are guys that are career backups. And I think that's probably where Bryce Petty is. Again, a lot can change. I mean, he might click, and all this might click for him 2 weeks into training camp, and suddenly he's the best quarterback, and he goes on to prove everybody wrong, because I know a lot of people didn't necessarily expect Tony Romo, who's an undrafted guy, I think. Hey, I'm pretty sure he was undrafted. Like, Tony Romo to develop what Tony Romo became, or Dak Prescott to become what Dak Prescott became. So maybe it does eventually click for Bryce, but at this point, what we saw from him you know, in training camp and his rookie year, and then what we saw from him last year and some minor little bit of experience, and then what we've kind of seen from an OTA's mini camp this year, is you say this guy's probably more of a backup, and that's probably where he is. So is he in this wide-open quarterback competition? Yes, absolutely he is. But at the same time, there's a reason why Josh McCown is out-repping him in OTAs and minicamp, and why Christian Hackenberg is out-repping him in OTAs and minicamp, that the Jets kind of view that this quarterback situation might be wide open right now, but it's really kind of a two-horse race.
Now, Connor, there's so much talk around the Jets from media members and from the fans specifically about this team tanking. And with the recent cuts to Eric Decker, who just I saw got signed by the Tennessee Titans, and, of course, David Harris, it does look like the Jets are not necessarily tanking, but it clearly looks like their goal this year is not necessarily to win as many games as they possibly can, because if they did want to do that, you could make a case for a lot of these veterans that they let go. But you're in the building talking to players. How do the players view what the season's all about? When you guys talk to them about, you know, the outside noise about this tanking, what are some of the things that they talk about? What is their mindset?
They're not rolling over. I mean, that's the thing. I actually talked to Morris Claiborne about this in the locker room. He was kind of the Jets' prized free agent acquisition this year. And I was like, look, man, people are saying you guys are going to be bad this year. They're going to say you're tanking. And he turned around and he said, that's not our goal. Our goal is, in quote unquote, to come out there and bust some people's, you know, bleeps, is what he said this team's goal is. And you ask anybody there, Muhammad Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, Darren Lee, I mean, they hear what is being said about this team, and make no mistake, they're making note of it. I mean, they're saying, I'm remembering all these people saying we're going to suck. I'm remembering all these people saying we're going to be awful. I remember all these people saying we have no shot, and they're making mental note of it. Now, I think there does come a point where there is a talent deficiency on this roster where you're only going to be able to do so much. But these guys that are actually on the field, the guys that are going out there and playing, they're not trying to tank. I mean, because let's be honest, these guys tank and go out there and try to lose games. None of them are going to have jobs for much longer. I mean, they might know that this team isn't going to make a playoff run or a Super Bowl run, but they're also playing for their futures in the NFL. You know, Morris Claiborne, for example, a guy in a 1-year, $6 million deal. You don't think he wants to go out there and ball out and play incredible football and then get a big 4- or 5-year contract extension from the Jets or elsewhere and be one of the highest paid corners? You know, what do you think about Quincy Enunwa? He's a wide receiver, a guy going into his contract year. He wants to play. Josh McCown wants to continue his NFL career. He knows he's got to play well to keep doing that. Same goes for Christian Hackenberg and Petty if he gets a shot. And Matt Forte, who's going to be 32 this year. I think he's going to turn 32 at one point. So, you know, the Jets have a talent deficiency, and the Jets have definitely, management-wise, gotten rid of some players that can help this team win. But the guys that are on this field and the guys that are playing are not going out there to lose games. You know, they're going to do their all to make sure that they look good and make sure that they try to win some games. Now, the difference is that I think there is a talent deficiency where this team is not going to be able to win 9, 10, 11, 12 games, that their ceiling is probably around 6, maybe 7 wins if everything breaks their way. But, you know, the guys in the locker room don't view this as a tank job. The guys in the locker room aren't trying to lose games. They're trying to go out there and win.
We're talking with Jets beat reporter for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. That's Connor Hughes. So, Connor, say this team does go 3-13, 4-12, or worse than those two records I just threw out there. How does Todd Bowles survive this, and can he survive this? Because, let's be honest here, you mentioned the talent deficiency. There's a good chance that the Jets are not going to be a very good team this year. They were 5-11 last year, and they look like they got a lot worse. So if they are one of the worst teams in football, how does Todd Bowles survive this? Can he survive this?
That's a great question. I think you kind of answered it yourself. I don't think he can survive it, which is a shame, because I think that in this quote unquote tank job that the Jets are having, you've got a coach that's getting the short end of the stick when he doesn't really deserve it. I mean, Todd, I think, is a good coach. I think he can coach in the NFL. I think if you give Todd Bowles a good team, I think Todd Bowles can field a good team. You know, he can get a team. He took a team coached or quarterbacked by Ryan Fitzpatrick and some still legitimate talent concerns, and he got him to 10 wins and within striking distance of the playoffs. And Todd Bowles was not the reason why the Jets lost that game in Buffalo 2 years ago and kept them out of the playoffs. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, you know, you've got a coach that has proven he can win when he's got a competent team around him, and you've kind of gutted that competent team and given them, you know, I've written this a couple times, and you know, it was Bill Parcells was the one who said, you know, if they want you to cook the meal, the least they can do is let you shop for the groceries. And the groceries that they've given Todd, you can't make a happy meal out of this stuff, man. I mean, that's the truth. This team is just, there's a legitimate, like I said, talent deficiency. And unfortunately, Todd's probably going to be the one that gets fired because of it. But as good as he can coach his butt off and do everything that he can, and he's still probably only going to get this team to 5 wins. If he gets into 5, 6 wins, maybe he can keep his job. If you see promise from the young receivers like Robbie Anderson or Darius Stewart, Chad Hansen, and Darren Lee at linebacker, and Leonard Williams takes the next step, and you get something from Justin Burris, you know, maybe if the Jets are a very competitive 6-10 team or a very competitive 5-11 team where they win five games, but you know they're within a touchdown or 10 points in three or four other games, then maybe you can say, yeah, that you know what, that then Todd can keep his job because we were competitive and we were really in a lot of games and the guys didn't quit. Then maybe he can keep his job, but I've got concerns that this team's even going to win three games, man. And if they get to 3-13 or they get to 2-14, even if they're a competitive 3-13, a competitive 2-14 team, I really don't think Todd's going to keep his job. So I think the marker that he's got to get to is probably 4 wins. I'd say five. Let me change that. I think he's probably going to get to 5 or 6 wins. And by getting to those 5 or 6 wins, he's also got to be competitive in probably 4 or 5 other ones. And then maybe they can say, yeah, let's bring Todd back. But I think it's probably a long shot at this point that that's going to happen. And odds are after the year, Todd's going to get fired.
Now, Connor, is there anyone that has actually impressed? I know all this talk about tanking and guys losing jobs and whatnot, but, of course, the Jets took Jamal Adams. He fell down to them at the draft, and all the reports early on him have been phenomenal. So what have you seen from him, and is there anyone else out there from your eyes that has actually impressed so far in minicamp?
Jamal looks like the real deal, man. I mean, I'll be honest with you again. It's padless, no contact practices, and I've told people all the time, like, you know, kind of, temper those expectations with Jamal because we haven't seen anything yet. We haven't seen him in pads. We haven't seen him play a game. But this guy it was definitely the case in OTAs, and you can make the argument in minicamp that he was the most impressive player on the field in all of those workouts. And again, you know, Jets roster isn't all that good, so what does that really mean? But, you know, when you're a rookie and you're doing the things that Jamal Adams is doing is when you're like, you're taken back, man. And I'll be honest with you, he was that impressive in these workouts. And you know, the most impressive thing that he did wasn't even, like, he made a diving interception at one point and 4 or 5 pass breakups that took people back. But the most impressive thing that I saw is the last mini camp we witnessed, Jamal Adams ran to the offense broke the huddling and got set at the line, and Jamal Adams came sprinting up from his safety position and started screaming out what all of the offensive players were going to do. So he's saying, tight end drag, you know, wide receiver curl, he's going deep, and calling out the offense's play. And where the Jets reporters stand, we're pretty close on the sidelines, so we can hear everything that's happening. He's calling all this stuff out, and like I'm sitting next to a couple other guys. I'm like, what the hell is this guy saying? And the next thing you know, they snap the ball, and the offense does exactly what Jamal Adams said. I mean, literally to a T, they did exactly what Jamal said. And because Jamal pointed that out, the defense got themselves set. There was nowhere for the quarterback to go with the ball, so Christian Hackenberg took a sack from Sheldon Richardson because everything was covered. You know, when you're a 10-year veteran and you're doing that, that's impressive. When you're a rookie who has essentially had 13 practices as a pro under your belt and you're able to go out there and call out an offensive play before it happens, I mean, that's impressive. That was the most impressive thing he did. And, you know, when you can combine his physical gifts with his apparent football acumen, I mean, that's an incredible thing to say about a guy. So he has been as impressive as a guy can be in these practices. And the other guys that have stood out, I thought the two cornerbacks, Maurice Claiborne, who the Jets signed, and Justin Burris, who was a fourth-round pick last year, those two guys looked really good. Dylan Donahue, who was the fifth-round pick by the Jets this year, kind of a guy that a lot of people felt they reached on. He's looked really good going back to OTAs and minicamp, and the Jets actually given him a lot of first-team reps. I asked Todd Bowles, and Todd's just going to say, oh, you know, we're rotating everybody in and out. Last year, he was doing the same thing with Jordan Jenkins, and Jordan Jenkins ended up being the Jets' week one starter. And you don't see Elijah McGuire starting in front of Matt Forte, and you don't see Derek Jones starting in front of Maurice Claiborne. So the fact that they're giving Dylan Donahue first-team reps, you got to make a little note of that. So he's been really impressive. And I honestly think that once he actually gets on the field, Ardarius Stewart's going to be a guy to watch as well. I think he could have a pretty good role for this team.
And Connor, finally, Sheldon Richardson said this week that he wants to be a Jet for life. We all know the Jets have tried to move him, and even this offseason leading up to the draft, there were a ton of rumors involving Sheldon Richardson. He's going to be a free agent, of course, at the end of the season. Do you see any scenario where Sheldon Richardson can actually get a long-term deal from Mike McKagan and the Jets?
I find that hard to believe. I really do. I mean, I just don't – the Jets, I don't know how to be able to fit it, you know, because, I mean, you've got Mo Wilkerson. I mean, I guess technically – if Muhammad Wilkerson plays terrible, the Jets do have an out in his contract where they can cut him with limited financial rem. They still have to pay him some dead money, but they have an out in Muhammad Wilkerson's contract after this year. So technically, I guess I could see a situation where the Jets cut Muhammad Wilkerson after the year and then decided to re-sign Sheldon Richardson instead because Sheldon has some ridiculous all-pro year and they decide, all right, you know, we actually want Sheldon. We're going to get rid of Mo. But at this point, I think that it's probably best if both the Jets and Sheldon go their separate ways. And it's almost a similar situation when we were talking about Geno Smith, you know, this past offseason about should the Jets re-sign Geno Smith. Like, you know what? best thing that can happen for Geno is for Geno to go play for another team and for the Jets to just move on from that failed experiment. This is kind of another one of those things. That if, is there a possibility that he's back? Yeah, maybe. I could see a couple, probably not likely, but I could see some situations where that happens. But with that said, no. I mean, I think that the best thing that could possibly happen for the Jets after this season and for Sheldon Richardson is for Sheldon to go play for a team and for the Jets to kind of just move on from him. But again, I mean, who knows? You know, this is what we're saying right now on, what is it, June 18th? You know, when the decision comes, or when the time comes to make this decision 4 or 5 months from now, you know, then it could be something entirely different. So we'll see. But at this point, I'd hedge towards saying no. I know he's saying that, and it's a good thing to say, but I don't see it happening personally.
He's Connor Hughes. He covers the Jets for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. You can follow Connor on Twitter at Connor_J_Hughes. Connor, thanks so much, man. Really appreciate you taking a couple minutes out of your Sunday night to talk with us.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. And if you ever want to talk again, just so you know my number.
You got it. He's Connor Hughes, and he made some interesting points here. Obviously, you know the Jets are not going to be a very good team next year. We all know it. But my overall thoughts on the Jets, when you look at what this team is, if they're going to surprise you, maybe they found the quarterback, and if they're going to be awful, you know they're going to be awful, and maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel. I'll give you some more thoughts on the Jets when we come back here. It's time for our first break of the evening. 631-888-8811 is the phone number if you want to get involved on the program. More Sports Talk 1240 coming up right after these words.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, Jake Asman flying solo for the next 20 minutes. More Sports Talk 1240 coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, taking you till 10 p.m. I'm on, of course, for another 20 minutes or so. Thank you to my guest, Connor Hughes of the Star Ledger and NJ.com, for calling in to talk some J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. And real quick on the Jets before we move on, I know a lot of people want to talk NBA draft and McGregor Mayweather, and we will get to it. As a diehard Jet fan, though, you know the season going in could be painful. In fact, Connor Hughes tells you he thinks they might struggle to win more than two football games. And this is a guy that's in the building every day and knows football as well as anyone. Just telling you, you could tell the lack of talent out there on the field. But let me tell you something as a diehard Jet fan. If this team is as bad as everyone says they're going to be, you better hope that there's some light at the end of the tunnel. And I think for the first time in a while as a Jet fan, you know, maybe there is some light, because if there's a guy in Sam Darnold that wants to come out, or Josh Rosen, or somebody of that ilk, you know, there's three quarterbacks coming out. There's Rosen, there's Darnold, and then I believe the other quarterback's name is Allen from Wyoming. You're talking about a scenario where, you know what, maybe the Jets can finally find a quarterback spot and someone that could be their true franchise quarterback for the first time since Joe Namath. This is a Jets team that routinely has struggled at that position since Joe Namath left the team to go play for the LA Rams at the end of his career. You know, we've had a couple good quarterback seasons and spurts. Fitzpatrick in 15 was good to the final game. You know, Vinny Testaverde in 98 was incredible, and the Jets went all the way to the AFC Championship game. You know, Mark Sanchez, his rookie and his second year in the league, he wasn't an awful quarterback. He was actually pretty good. You look at what's going on with this team going forward, though, and obviously you don't feel good about them this year, but if they're going to be bad, you hope that there is a quarterback that could be the long-term answer for the first time in a long time. And it's time that the Jets invest a premium pick in that position. I didn't want them to do it this year because they had two young quarterbacks on the roster. So if you look at this Jets team, and they have Hackenberg and they have Petty, I don't even want to talk about Josh McCown, because if he's going to play, it won't be for long. He eventually will give up the reins to one of the younger two quarterbacks out on the roster. More likely, it will be Christian Hackenberg. But the Jets know that if they're going to be bad, they're going to get a top pick in a stacked quarterback draft. We know that. But what if the Jets are better than people suspect? What if this team actually wins 7 or 8 games? And the only scenario I could see where something like that would happen would be that Christian Hackenberg actually turns out to be a legitimate quarterback that you could say could be a franchise quarterback for your team moving forward. That's the only way the Jets are decent this year. That's it. Forget going to the Super Bowl. We all know that's not happening. Forget the playoffs. If they're okay, it means that Hackenberg probably played pretty well. Maybe he saves Todd Bowles' job after all. But that's the only way they're decent, because if they're going to be bad, you know they're going to address the position. So either way, the quarterback spot will be worked out at some point at the end of the season. They're either going to have the guy on the roster in-house in Hackenberg, or they're going to be so bad, they're going to take a quarterback with a top-5 pick anyway next season. And that's how you got to look at it, is if you're a Jet fan. You're sacrificing this year with the hope of finally being a good team. Let's look at the Tampa Bay Bucks. They got Winston. They turned it around. Marcus Mariota, who now has Eric Decker to throw the football to. They were bad. They turned it around and got those guys at the top of the draft. Andrew Luck with Peyton Manning. And I know the Colts weren't tanking, but the minute they lost Peyton Manning, you knew they were going to be bad. And they lost Peyton Manning. They're the worst team in the league at the right time because they have the best luck. And they get, no pun intended, Andrew Luck. You look at how quarterbacks are found all the time, and you do always find, you know, a diamond in the rough. You find an undrafted guy in Tony Romo. You find a fourth-round pick in Dak Prescott. But if you're the Jets, you need to get a sure thing at that spot. And there's no such thing as a sure thing in sports. But if you get a guy like Sam Darnold or a Josh Allen, someone that is so universally praised by people that know football better than you or me, the listener, do right now, then you feel a lot better about this team moving forward if they could shore up some stability at that position. So if they're going to be bad this year, let the young kids play, get their experience, and then you just hope that McCagan, as the GM, you would think, still being able to make these decisions a year from now, you hope that they're able to draft that quarterback. So we know they're not going to be good. The Jets are going to be awful. But if they impress, maybe it means Hackenberg was the reason. It probably will be. And if they're god-awful like everyone says they're going to be, at least you know that starting next year, there's going to be a legitimate franchise quarterback that will be in place. And that makes a huge difference, obviously, because you can't win without a quarterback in a quarterback-driven league. You could try and get by with your Ryan Fitzpatricks, your journeyman quarterbacks, your Vinny Testaverdes, your second-round picks in Geno Smith, or you could get it totally wrong with Mark Sanchez. The Jets have tried everything. I'm okay with them going into this year if they're going to be bad, but it must end with a legitimate franchise quarterback coming out the other end of that tunnel. Otherwise, the pain and misery of the season is not going to be worth it. It's going to be brutal. 631-888-8811. We talked baseball earlier. We had Connor Hughes on to talk Jets. If you want to call in, talk some Jets. We'll even open it up to talk Giants. You could do that. But this next topic is about the clown show that we're all going to watch. And yes, it's a clown show. We're all going to watch it on August 26th. Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather in the octagon. I know I'm going to watch it, you're going to watch it, and if you say you're not going to watch it, I probably don't believe you. And let's be honest here, folks. The buzz for this fight, the buzz, the press conferences, the tweets, the Instagrams, Conor McGregor has already started on both. That's going to be better than this actual fight. But we're going to watch it anyway. And I told myself after I paid money to watch Pacquiao Mayweather a couple of years ago in 2015, I would never pay for another Floyd Mayweather fight again. But I'm going to pay for it. I'll probably split it. I'll go out to a sports bar with some buddies, drink some brews, and we'll watch this fight. Why?
Because we all love the circus. We all love a clown show. It's like when we were on the side of the road during an accident. We all slow down to see what's going on. We're all going to slow down and see what's going on here with this show. And the show is Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. A boxer that's never lost a fight versus an MMA fighter that's never boxed. That's what we have here. And we're going to watch it. Why? Because the buzz is going to sell the fight. We love circuses. We love clown shows. We love the elephants. We love it all. This is a spectacle. We know it's going to be bad. Everyone in their own right has told you, oh, you know, Conor's got no shot. I don't think he's going to win. I'm not going to say he has no shot. Maybe he has a 1% chance. That 1% being Floyd doesn't take it seriously, and maybe Conor's able to get that one hit in there that could rock Floyd Mayweather and end his night. That's the only way I see Conor winning. And I'm not a boxing guy. I'm not going to break down this fight for you. There's nothing to break down. And we had till August 26th for this fight to be all hyped up. But this is a no-lose situation for Conor McGregor. Let's look at it from his perspective. He's clowning us. He's going to walk out of there with $100 million plus in his pocket for a guy that's not even a boxer. You know how much money Conor McGregor is getting for just showing up and hyping up the fight? Does he really care if he loses? He's getting paid. And we heard so much about this fight for the last year. Is it going to happen? Are these two guys going to fight? Well, let me tell you something. Money talks. And when there was this kind of money to be made for these guys, you knew something was going to happen. You knew some sort of deal was going to happen, because when there's money to be made, people are going to talk. And Floyd Mayweather said he was retired. He's never fighting again. Conor says he's not going to take less money than what Floyd's going to make. We all know that's nonsense. It's nonsense. Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather are going to fight, and they're each going to get tons of money. They're each going to be pleased with the result. In November, this fantasy fight that didn't even exist yet, Floyd Mayweather was minus 2,200 odds. Now it's all the way down to minus 600. People are betting money on McGregor because they feel it's the only way to make money. You're going to put money on Floyd, you got to put at least $2,200 just to make $100. You bet Floyd Mayweather and you want to make $100, you got to put $2,200 on Floyd Mayweather. That's what it was in November. Now it's down to minus 600. So you got to bet $600 on Floyd Mayweather just to win $100. McGregor, you know, you bet a little money on McGregor, he pulls it off, you're the happiest man in the world. Good for you. But let's be honest here. This is a spectacle. Nobody's going to watch. All right, excuse me. Everyone's going to watch. Nobody's going to really care about the result. If you go into this expecting Conor McGregor to win, I mean, you got to get your head examined. Go into it hoping that maybe it could be better than the nonsense we watched 2 years ago between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, when they both barely touched each other and Floyd was more into hugging Manny Pacquiao than actually trying to go bow to bow with him and land some punches in that ring. This will be a spectacle. This will be interesting. The press conferences, I think if they did it in primetime, would get a real number in the ratings. I really do. And I think that's what we have here. We have two guys that are egotistical maniacs that love the fight, love to talk a big game, and they love money. And that's why we have a fight. And people that work in boxing and cover it, I mean, they're talking about how this is going to be a mockery. If Floyd fought in the UFC, the UFC people would obviously say Conor McGregor would win. Conor's not fighting Floyd Mayweather in the UFC octagon. He's fighting him in a boxing ring. They play chess. I don't know who would win. But if they're going to box, Floyd's going to win. If they're going to fight UFC, Conor's going to win. That's the story with this fight here. Anyone that is going to pay, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to pay, you have to know going in it's not going to be good. But you're going to do it anyway, because the same reason as I just said before, you slow down to see what's going on the side of a road during an accident. You're going to slow down and you're going to find a way to get together with your friends or order the fight on Showtime pay-per-view because you want to see a clown show. You want to see a clown show, you're going to get a clown show. And that's what we have here right now between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. And I'm going to watch. You could say you're not going to watch. I'm going to watch. We're all going to watch. Even if you don't want to say it, you're going to be interested in what happens here. You're going to follow along. And that's the genius of this, because you have a boxer fighting an MMA fighter in the boxer sport, and the MMA fighter has never fought in the boxing ring in his life. Unbelievable, but money's money, and they're going to be making a lot of money here. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, folks. So I wish everyone the best of luck that's going to cough up the $100. Find a buddy to split it with, because you're going to watch. I'm going to watch. We're all going to watch, and we're probably going to be vastly, vastly disappointed. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. We're going to dive into the NBA draft now. We're going to talk about the New York Knicks and the latest news that Paul George all of a sudden informed the Pacers front office that he does not intend to re-sign with the Indiana Pacers, making him an unrestricted free agent in 2018. Paul George this year, he can opt out of his contract in that summer, be an unrestricted free agent, and go wherever he wants. Be another piece to another NBA super team, because we all just love the super teams. But Paul George tells the Pacers he's going to leave, and I think we all saw this coming. But now the question becomes, what does Indiana do with Paul George? Who can they deal him to? And is it going to be Cleveland? Is Paul George the missing piece for the Cleveland Cavaliers to get over the hump of the Golden State Warriors? Do they have to give up Kevin Love in a move for Paul George? And does that even make the Cavs that much better if they add Paul George and he replaces Kevin Love? Or can they somehow swing it? And I don't know how they would do this salary cap-wise. Paul George still makes a lot of money. I don't know how they would be able to parlay all four of those guys so they could have their four stars going up against the Golden State Warriors, four stars. But you look at what's going on in the NBA right now, and it's all about two teams. It's all about the super teams. And you know the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be very interested in Paul George. So this just came out a couple hours before I went on the air. It was definitely worth addressing. But I want to get into the NBA draft now. The Knicks, of course, have the eighth pick. But before we even really get into the draft, we had a major trade. The Boston Celtics decided to trade the number one overall pick to the 76ers. And we're finally starting to see this process that 76ers fans have been talking about. The Sam Hinkie Express. The Sam Hinkie experiment that we've been hearing so much about. We're finally going to get to see what this process is all about. And Sam Hinkie, the former GM of the Sixers that revolutionized the art of tanking, is finally getting a chance to see his creation here in that they already had Joel Embiid on board. They already now have Ben Simmons, who missed all of last year as the number one overall pick a season ago. He's going to be ready by training camp. He's ready now. He's going to go out there and be part of this team moving forward. And now they make the big splash, giving up a pick to the Boston Celtics in that swap as the Celtics now move down to the third spot. So the 76ers are going to go and get Markelle Fultz. So you're looking at a team moving forward, a young team that is trying to be ready to win a title, be ready to compete for a championship when LeBron James, who is 32 years old, no longer wreaks havoc on the Eastern Conference and owns it like he has throughout the duration of his career. The man has been to the finals the last seven straight years. Teams are starting to prepare for life after LeBron James. And the Sixers, they pulled the trigger here, and that's what they did. And I love this move, really, for both sides. I think if you're a Sixers fan, you have to be ecstatic. You're talking about a team that had all these assets. They still have five first-round picks over the next couple years. So they gave up one, and they swapped to move up. And it's worth it for them because they need a point guard. And if you're the Boston Celtics, you already have Isaiah Thomas. You already have Avery Bradley. You already have Marcus Smart. You have a team that has so many different guards. You could afford to make a move like this. And they acquire an extra asset, which goes back to life after LeBron. They don't want to be ready to beat LeBron James next year. They're not going to be. They were the one seed this year, and LeBron wrecked them in five games, and it really could have been four. But they were able to get game four, so you give the Celtics a lot of credit. They didn't get swept. But this team was the one seed, and LeBron, as the two seed, made a joke out of them because the Cavs didn't care about the regular season. It was all about the postseason. So the Celtics say, you know what? We'll trade the number one pick. We have a guy in Markelle Fultz we like, but we don't necessarily need because we have so many guards. And we'll make a move, and they'll feel a lot better about this move because if they go get a guy like Josh Jackson at number three, that's exactly what the Celtics need to continue to build around going forward. And, oh, yeah, they already have this guy named Isaiah Thomas playing that point guard position, and they love Isaiah Thomas, and I think they ultimately felt that as good as Markelle Fultz is, they could get better in other places by dealing this pick. They are the first team to ever be the one seed and have the number one overall pick. They don't need the number one overall pick necessarily. They need to find a way to improve long term and in the short term. They do so by making this trade with the Sixers. 631-888-8811 is the phone number to call and get involved. Let's go out to Brett in New Jersey. Brett, what's going on?
What's up, Jake? How are you?
Hey, Brett, how are you?
Good. I heard you talking about the Celtics 76ers trade. I wanted to get in on it.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Oh, what's on my mind? As good as a move I think this is for Philadelphia, I think it's kind of like, I think the Celtics kind of just like laughed in the 76ers' face with this, because honestly, I think the 76ers are going to do what they always do. They're going to draft someone solid, they're going to get hurt, and they're going to trade the guy in the next 2 years.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's kind of how it's gone for this team. I will say this, though. You can't think in terms of, oh, this guy's going to get hurt. I think if you look at it from both teams making the move, how it makes them better, it's a good trade. But you're right. I mean, the Sixers haven't exactly had the best luck with these guys going down. And that's another thing. You actually make a really good point, Brett. You know, as good as Joel Embiid is, he's never been able to stay healthy. So you're talking about a guy that has had some real issues staying healthy. And Ben Simmons missed all of last year, so we don't know what he is just yet. It's a good point by you. Listen, it makes a lot of sense, but there's always that injury risk. That's why we don't go and anoint anyone champions just yet, unless it's the Golden State Warriors, and I could have told you that on July 4th. But besides that, you don't go and anoint anyone an NBA champion yet. So I think that's a great point by you, Brett. But I think from the standpoint of both teams making a move, it makes a ton of sense. Let's go to Nate in New York. Nate, keep it going. What's going on, Nate?
How you doing, Aspen?
Hey, Nate, what's up?
So just want to quickly, I know you only got a few minutes left, but I want to hear your thoughts on the Paul George situation, and imagine if that was, as if the Knicks were in the Pacers situation, and a player told him, I know I'm under contract for the next season, but I don't want to be there. What do you think they should do with that?
Yeah, you know, the Knicks should better be careful, because, you know, the way they're treating Kristaps Porzingis right now in the minds of Porzingis, you know, you don't want Porzingis to be saying that to Phil Jackson. But, you know, my overall thoughts on this is I want to see what happens here. I think if Paul George is able to be traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers, what are they giving up to get him? Because if they're able to give up Kevin Love, does Paul George make them better? I think it does. But does he put them on the level of the Warriors? I'm not so sure he does just alone. But if they could somehow, I don't know how they'd make this work. I'd have to really look into it. All the news is still coming out now. If they could somehow make it work that they could keep Love and still have Paul George with those other two guys, that could make a huge difference. Maybe Tristan Thompson, as you just said, maybe he's the guy that could facilitate that trade.
Salary-wise, he's the only one. Yeah, they can't give out Love. They need four. They need four studs.
And that's the problem with the NBA. You need four studs to win. And, Nate, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Have a good one. I'll see you. Go Gigglebush.
That's Nate checking in out in New York, Long Island. A couple minutes left here in the program right here on Sports Talk 1240. Make sure you listen to the podcast available on sportstalk1240.com, or you can check it out on iTunes and subscribe in case you miss any of the action. Some quick thoughts on the Knicks before we wrap this up right here. I don't know what they are going to do, and I'm not going to pretend I know what the Knicks are going to do at number 8. I think that if they are in a scenario where Malik Monk is available, I'd be okay with Malik Monk. He's a great scorer, and maybe that sends a message to Carmelo, hey, your services are no longer needed. Or if they want to get a guy in Dennis Smith that could be that true point guard, please get Dennis Smith, because I can't listen to Derrick Rose being willing to take a pay cut for the Knicks to bring him back. I wouldn't touch Derrick Rose with a 10-foot pole. That is not a move that the Knicks need to make to bring him back. That makes the Knicks worse. I will be so disappointed if the Knicks bring back Derrick Rose. And if they draft Dennis Smith, you feel a lot better about this team, because all of a sudden they have a point guard that has huge upside you could build around. But then there's also a rumor that maybe they could be interested in taking the French point guard. And it worked well with Porzingis, but just be careful expecting any European player now for Phil Jackson to necessarily work. That's not how it works. So the Knicks have some options here, but this is an important draft for Phil Jackson. You know it. I know it. Fans of the NBA know it. The way this Knicks season has gone, Phil Jackson needs to make sure that he hits this pick out of the park. Needs to be a grand slam home run. That's all the time we have here. Hour 2 of Sports Talk coming up. Andy Sukoff is coming in to host that hour. I'm Jake Asman. You can follow me on Twitter, @JakeAsman. Thank you to my guest tonight, Connor Hughes, for checking in. Thank you to Brian Graves for producing and board hopping on the other side of the glass. I will be back soon right here on WGBB. Thanks for listening. So long, everyone.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.